the problem of authority. The failure of clerical leadership prompted theologians and laity to call on the secular authorities for protection and support. Religious issues became impossible to disentangle from political questions as political backing for Luther expanded the evangelical movement from simply protesting within the Roman Church to creating a rival structure. The real question by 1530 was one of authority. It was not clear who among the emperor, princes, magistrates, or people was entitled to decide which version of Christianity was correct. Nor was it clear how to resolve who owned church property or how to deal with dissent. Some reformers like Caspar Schwenkfeld and Melchior Hoffmann rejected virtually all established authority, while a few like Thomas Munzer envisaged a communistic, godly society. Such radicalism was discredited by the violence accompanying the Knights' Revolt, 1522-1523, and Peasants' War, 1524-1526. Regardless of belief, the empire's authorities had closed ranks to exclude common folk from these decisions by 1526. However, evangelicals continued to elaborate theological arguments to resist those who opposed their goals by claiming that duty to God trumped political obedience. Unfortunately, even they disagreed about who possessed such rights of resistance. While most restricted such resistance to godly magistrates, it was far from clear who these were, given the empire's multiple layers of authority. Luther's protest came at entirely the wrong time for the aging emperor Maximilian I, who was in the middle of brokering the election of his grandson, Charles, King of Spain, as his successor. The pressure of other events ensured that nearly 2 years elapsed between Charles's election as emperor in 1519 and his arrival in the empire to open his first Reichstag at Worms in April 1521. The delay fueled not only mounting and unrealistic expectations, but also frustration at the pace of constitutional reform. The decisions over the next 3 years proved decisive in determining how religion affected later imperial politics. Luther's refusal to recant at Worms prompted Charles to impose the imperial ban, effectively criminalizing the evangelicals as outlaws who threatened the empire's internal public peace. Under the judicial system developed since 1495, all imperial estates were supposed to enforce this decision. But Charles acted more honorably than Sigismund had behaved towards Jan Hus. Having allowed Luther to enter Worms under safe conduct, Charles permitted him to leave unmolested. The Elector of Saxony, who sympathized with Luther, then arranged to have him hidden in Wartburg Castle, where he stayed for 10 months while others spread his message, largely unchecked. Having sought to detach theological issues from public order, Charles issued the Edict of Burgos on the 15th of July 1524, expressly rejecting calls to hold a national council to debate church reform. This completed his attempt to separate religion and politics along the traditional lines expressed by the Two Swords doctrine. The Pope was to decide what constituted the correct version of Christianity, while Charles, as emperor, would enforce this using the empire's legal machinery to crush dissent as a public order issue. A lost opportunity? The controversy surrounding the decisions of 1521 to 1524 persisted into the 19th century. Protestant German nationalists condemned what they regarded as a lost opportunity to embrace their faith as a truly German religion, thereby forging the empire as a nation-state. This failure was often woven into explanations of later German woes. The country was supposedly left divided, hindering unification under Bismarck, who regarded Catholics as disloyal after 1871 because of their continued religious allegiance to Rome. These charges rest on a partisan Protestant reading of history and the self-identification of that faith as inherently German, as well as a gross oversimplification of the situation facing people in the 16th century empire, that is, a supposedly simple choice between Catholicism and Protestantism. The vast majority hoped the controversy could be resolved without shattering Christian unity. Wholehearted support for Luther made little political sense for Charles V, regardless of his own fairly conservative views on faith. Ruling the birthplace of the Reformation, Charles confronted evangelism when it appeared indelibly associated with political subversion and challenges to the socio-economic order, and before it had acquired the theological and institutional footing, making it acceptable later in other countries such as England. Charles's imperial title was tied to a universal, not a national, church, and it remained inconceivable, both to himself and to many of his subjects, that he should not follow the same faith as the Pope. These considerations help explain why the Empire did not adopt what became the general Western European solution to the religious controversy of imposing a monarchical civil peace. This entailed the ruler deciding on a single official faith enshrined in a written statement prepared by his theologians, as, for example, in England, or through publicly defending Catholicism. Regardless of the precise theology, this produced a confessional state with a single established church allied institutionally and politically to the crown. Toleration of dissenters was a matter of political expediency, granted when the monarchy was weak, as in the case of late 16th century France, or where the official church remained opposed by a significant minority, as in England. Either way, dissenters depended on special royal dispensations which could be curtailed or revoked unilaterally, as the French Huguenots discovered in 1685. Toleration might be widened incrementally through further dispensations, like the Catholic Emancipation Act, 1829, in Britain, but a privileged, established church remained. Few countries have ever gone as far as the French Republic, which separated church and state in 1905, establishing a modern secular peace, treating all faiths equally, provided their followers do not transgress state laws. Secularization. Rather than imposing a solution by fiat from above, the empire negotiated its solution collectively through the new constitutional structures emerging from imperial reform. Unity rested on consensus, not central power, and the result was religious and legal pluralism, not orthodoxy and a disadvantaged or persecuted minority. This outcome emerged from fierce and sometimes violent disputes over constitutional rights, rather than through ecumenical compromise. Once all parties had agreed by 1526 that matters should be settled by the proper authorities rather than the common man, two core issues remained. One involved the question of spiritual jurisdiction, since this determined the authority to direct the religious belief and practices of ordinary folk in specific areas. The other concerned the management of clergy and church assets like buildings, property, and revenue streams. These had always been important issues in imperial history. The Ottonians had already revoked donations and transferred land to secular lords. This process accelerated after 1100, as the emperor needed more resources to compensate nobles for their military expenses. Meanwhile, secular lords curtailed or usurped the secular jurisdictions of their ecclesiastical neighbors, removing them as imperial estates, but not as functioning Catholic institutions. This continued beyond the Reformation, as the Archbishop of Salzburg incorporated the possessions of the bishops of Gurk, Zwickau, and Levant. Charles V himself bought the secular jurisdiction of the Bishop of Utrecht in 1528, and in 1533 would have accepted a similar offer from the Archbishop of Bremen if the Pope had not objected. However, secularization in these cases mostly involved smaller properties and rarely threatened spiritual jurisdiction. The evangelical movement posed an entirely new challenge through its objection to papal jurisdiction and its rejection of good works and prayer for the dead as justifying monasticism. Georg the Pious of Ansbach-Kulmbach did sequestrate religious houses in 1529 and then sell them to fund road and fortress construction in a move prefiguring Henry VIII's dissolution of the monasteries, 1536 to 1540. However, this was exceptional in the empire, where secularization generally meant a change of public use. Church assets were placed in public trusts by reform-minded princes and used to fund a more numerous and better educated clergy, evangelize by teaching the population to read the Bible, and improve welfare through hospitals and poor relief. For example, the Duke of Württemberg converted 13 monasteries into schools to train pastors in 1556. Conflict was not always inevitable. The complexity of legal and property rights in the empire prevented a clear demarcation of jurisdiction and ownership, necessitating fairly frequent discussion between the different authorities. These discussions often continued despite religious animosities. However, many Catholics regarded the evangelicals' redesignation of church property and use of spiritual jurisdictions as robbery, breaching the public peace, and opened the so-called religious cases in the imperial courts. Becoming Protestants. The problem fell to Charles's younger brother, Ferdinand I, who was left to oversee the empire during the emperor's prolonged absences after 1522. Ferdinand had inherited Hungary in 1526 amidst an Ottoman invasion. This existential threat to the empire encouraged the imperial estates to avoid matters that might escalate to civil war. The 1526 Reichstag at Speyer tried to uphold the Burgos Edict by allowing imperial estates to act according to their consciences until the papal-chaired church council ruled on doctrine. The decision essentially settled the question of authority by identifying the imperial estates as responsible for religious affairs in their own territories. Electoral Saxony, Hessen, Lüneburg, Ansbach, and Anhalt now followed the example of some imperial cities 2 years earlier and began converting church assets and jurisdictions to serve evangelical objectives. These decisions were influenced by the personal convictions of princes, the location of their lands, regional influence, and their relations to the empire and papacy. For instance, thanks to its earlier concordats, Bavaria already enjoyed considerable control over the church on its territory and had little incentive to break with Rome. Given the long history of secular supervision of church affairs in the empire, these changes did not automatically identify a territory as evangelical. Several important princes kept arrangements deliberately ambiguous, like the Elector of Brandenburg, while religious practices amongst the bulk of the population remained heterodox. The new Lutheran territorial churches issued several revisions to its initial statement of faith, while other reformers, like Huldrych Zwingli and Jean Calvin, produced their own competing confessions. Similarly, Catholic thought and practice were hardly monolithic and contained their own reforming impulses, so that we should speak of multiple reformations. The growing divergence was nonetheless clear by the next Reichstag in Speyer in 1529. Catholics disputed the evangelicals' interpretation of the 1526 meeting as a license to forge ahead with religious reform. Since the majority of imperial estates were still Catholic, they reversed the earlier decision and insisted on full enforcement of Charles V's Edict of Worms, banning Luther and his adherents. The ruling prompted the famous Protestatio, giving rise to the word Protestant, as the Elector of Saxony led five princes and magistrates from 14 imperial cities in dissenting from the majority. This was the first open breach in the political unity of the empire. Failure of the military solution. The Protestants formed the Schmalkaldic League in 1531 for mutual defense. The Ottoman threat encouraged Ferdinand to suspend the Worms Edict in 1532 and then extend this truce three times by 1544. Meanwhile, the League was weakened by internal divisions and scandals amongst its princely leadership. Having temporarily gained ascendancy over France and the Ottomans in 1544 to 1545, Charles V returned to the empire with a large army. The Elector of Saxony and the Landgrave of Hessen were declared outlaws after they attacked their regional rival, the Duke of Brunswick. This allowed Charles to present his intervention as restoring the empire's public peace. The resulting Schmalkaldic War of 1546 to 1547 saw the League's comprehensive defeat, culminating in Charles's victory at Mühlberg, which was celebrated in Titian's famous portrait of the emperor as triumphant general. Charles held the Armored Reichstag, Geharnischter Reichstag, at Augsburg between September 1547 and June 1548, under a strong imperial military presence. Intended to consolidate his victory, this Reichstag represented the only time the emperor attempted to define doctrine by issuing a statement of faith that he hoped would last until the Pope's council, meeting in Trent, passed judgment. Known as the Interim, Charles's statement offered a new hybrid imperial religion, incorporating some Protestant elements. Although the Interim was endorsed by the Archbishop of Mainz, most Catholics already disavowed it ahead of its promulgation, while Protestants rejected it as an imposition. The unsatisfactory settlement was widely resented as a breach of consensus, and Charles was accused of exceeding his authority. Magdeburg's armed defiance of the Interim galvanized more general opposition across 1551, leading to the Prince's Revolt the following year that was backed by France, which had renewed its own war with the Habsburgs. 3 months of maneuvering convinced Ferdinand, who had again been left by Charles to manage the empire, to agree the Peace of Passau on the 31st of July, 1552. This provided the basis for a general settlement through the mutual renunciation of violence to settle religious disagreements. The Peace of Augsburg. The initiative had slipped from Charles to Ferdinand, who won support through his more consistent dealings with princes and adherence to constitutional norms. This allowed Ferdinand to convert the temporary arrangements, evolving since 1521, into a more stable peace, securing broad acceptance of this as necessary to preserve the cherished imperial unity. The result was the agreement concluded at the 1555 Reichstag, which has entered history as the religious peace, but was known to contemporaries as the religious and profane peace. The differences are important. The treaty annulled the interim and deliberately avoided any religious statement. Rather than grant toleration, as was soon to be attempted in France, the peace extended political and legal rights to both Catholics and Lutherans. These privileges were part of a much longer document adjusting the empire's police, defense, and financial arrangements as parts of a comprehensive constitutional package. The key questions of authority, property, and jurisdiction were encompassed by the right of reformation, jus reformandi, granted to imperial estates to manage the church and religious affairs in their territories. Possession of church property was fixed at the date of the Peace of Passau as the empire's normative year, Normaljahr. Protestants accepted that the Reichskammergericht could resolve specific disputes. No imperial estate was to transgress the property or jurisdiction of another, meaning that Catholic spiritual jurisdiction was now suspended over those territories embracing Lutheranism. Limited freedom of conscience and rights of emigration were extended to inhabitants who dissented from their territory's official faith. These arrangements have entered history as "He who rules decides the religion," quius regio, eius religio, though the phrase is absent from the piece and was only coined by Joachim Stefan, a Greifswald University law professor, in 1586. They are usually credited with strengthening the empire's supposed dualism between a weak emperor and more distinct principalities. Yet although rights were granted equally to both confessions, Catholic and Lutheran, they were distributed unevenly along the status hierarchy among imperial estates. Regardless of faith, imperial cities lacked the full right of reformation, as they were obliged to stick to whichever faith they had adopted by 1555. The imperial knights were excluded, while it was uncertain how far counts enjoyed the same powers as princes to change their subjects' faith. In short, the Reformation's political outcome reinforced the empire's existing development towards a mixed monarchy, where the emperor shared power to differing degrees with a complex hierarchy of imperial estates. The imperial church was covered by a special clause known as the ecclesiastical reservation, because it obliged all incumbent bishops who converted from Catholicism to stand down, whilst also ruling that Protestants were ineligible for election as church princes. These restrictions were modified by Ferdinand's declaration, issued on his own authority, separate from the peace, which extended toleration to Protestant minorities in the imperial church lands. Apart from Ferdinand's declaration, the peace was collectively owned by all imperial estates, setting it apart from other Western European settlements. Whereas other monarchies became confessionalized through identification with a single official faith, the empire remained simply Christian, while the legal position of Jews remained unaffected. This was potentially a source of great strength, since the autonomy and identity of both major religions rested on shared rights guaranteed by the confessionally neutral constitutional order. There was, however, a price. A modern separation of church and state was impossible, and religion remained integral to imperial politics. Formal political action remained open-ended. The Catholic majority ruling of the 1529 Reichstag had remained unenforceable, and it now appeared that future majority decisions would remain provisional until those in favor won acceptance from dissenters. The real decision of 1552 to 1555 was the mutual renunciation of violence by the imperial estates as part of this process. The outcome beyond Germany. Most accounts of the Reformation in the Empire stop at this point, interpreting developments as simply German history. Yet all the major reformers thought in terms of a single, universal church, while the empire was still much bigger than just Germany. The Peace of Augsburg settled matters between the emperor and those parts of the empire that had acquired the status of imperial estates during the late 15th century constitutional reforms. The largest estates were those areas under direct Habsburg rule in Austria and Burgundy, meaning that the imperial family shared the same rights granted to other princes. The treaties of Passau, 1552, and Augsburg, 1555, did not alter the Burgundian treaty, which was part of the package of measures that Charles secured at the armored Reichstag in 1548. This assigned the Burgundian lands to his son, the future Philip II of Spain, who retained them when Charles partitioned his entire inheritance into Spanish and Austrian branches across 1551 to 1558. As an imperial prince, Philip exercised his right of reformation to instruct his Burgundian subjects to remain Catholic. But his violent methods contributed to what became the Dutch Revolt after 1566, leading to the eventual independence of the northern provinces. Bohemian religious affairs continued along their own route, reflecting that kingdom's special place within the imperial constitution. The 1436 Compacta had been revised as the Treaty of Gutenberg in 1485, guaranteeing the Utraquists autonomy at parish level through the appointment of their own priests, while forbidding lords to dictate their peasants' faith. This arrangement prefigured that at Augsburg 70 years later, in that it accepted only two confessions, in this case, Catholicism and Utraquism, whilst denying rights to dissenting minorities like the Bohemian Brethren. The Treaty of Gutenberg was confirmed in 1512 and accepted by Ferdinand I when he became Bohemian king in 1526. For outsiders, Utraquists remained tainted by Hussite subversion, and no one saw Gutenberg as a desirable model for domestic religious peace. Yet the agreement remained legally binding, despite the Peace of Augsburg, thanks to Bohemia's political autonomy and the Habsburgs' need to retain support amongst the Bohemian nobility. The spread of Lutheranism among German speakers during the 1570s added to the kingdom's religious pluralism. In his capacity as Bohemian king, Maximilian II gave oral sanction to the Confessio Bohemica, agreed between Utraquists, Lutherans, and the Bohemian Brethren in 1575. Written confirmation was later extorted from his successor, Rudolf II, in 1609, in the form of the Letter of Majesty, allowing dissenters to establish parallel administrative and ecclesiastical institutions. Although this was overturned during the Thirty Years' War, the distinct course of Bohemian religious developments reinforced that kingdom's autonomous place within the empire. The Reformation also strengthened similar political trends amongst the Swiss, who were still redefining their relationship to the empire when the religious crisis broke. Theological differences reinforced this, because Swiss evangelicals followed their own reformer, Huldrych Zwingli, rather than Luther. The Swiss agreed their own version of Quius Regio, Eius Religio in 1529, resolving the question of authority in favor of the cantonal governments. This collapsed in 1531, but the Catholic victory in the ensuing civil war ended Protestant expansion in the Confederation's core regions. Protestants conceded legal guarantees for Catholic minorities in the condominia, the lands jointly administered by two or more cantons. Protestant minorities belatedly secured equivalent rights after another brief war in 1712. Like Bohemia, Switzerland was able to pursue its own path because it already enjoyed considerable political autonomy and remained outside the institutions created by imperial reform. The common heritage of the empire is nonetheless apparent in the broad similarity of political and legal solutions to the problem of religious division. Imperial Italy also lay largely outside the new common institutions, but was bound more closely to the empire through the Habsburgs' possession of Milan, as well as their acquisition through Spain of Naples and Sicily to the south. Itinerant evangelical preachers drew huge crowds, while senior clerics like Cardinal Contarini conceded the need for reform. The Italian wars since 1494 were widely interpreted as a sign of divine displeasure and added to the sense of urgency. Charles V pressured a succession of popes to respond positively to the Protestant criticism of the Italian Church. However, he remained within his interpretation of the Two Swords doctrine. After theologians failed to resolve their difference during talks at the 1541 Regensburg Reichstag, Charles allowed Pope Paul III to enforce Catholicism in Italy through the Inquisition and the new Jesuit order. The Italian principalities were excluded from the Peace of Augsburg because they were not imperial estates except the Duchy of Savoy, which had been incorporated within the German kingdom during the 14th century. However, Savoy refrained from direct engagement in the events leading to Augsburg, pursuing instead its own, more Western European-style settlement towards the Waldensian communities that had persisted in its Alpine and Piedmontese territories since the late 12th century and had been reinvigorated through contact with Swiss reformers after 1532. The Duke of Savoy granted special dispensation to designated villages in the Peace of Cavour on the 5th of June 1561, and allowed exiles to return, provided the Waldensians refrained from proselytizing. This agreement was close to those adopted in France after 1562, and proved equally unstable, especially because the Duke remained susceptible to pressure from other Catholic monarchs to renew persecution. The persistence of at least some form of toleration nonetheless contributed to the generally positive impression among German Protestant princes, who continued to regard the Duke as a potential ally into the 17th century. Religion and imperial politics after 1555. Preserving the Augsburg settlement. The Peace of Augsburg suffered from the same divergence of interpretation undermining the earlier agreement at Speyer in 1526, though it survived far longer without serious trouble. Catholics regarded it as limiting further encroachments on their church, while Protestants believed the legal protection licensed the continued expansion of their own religion. Many now openly embraced Lutheranism by reforming clergy and churches in their territories along evangelical lines. The basic religious balance within Germany was complete by the late 1550s, at which point Lutheranism had been officially adopted in around 50 principalities and counties and 36 imperial cities. These included some very substantial territories, notably the electorates of Saxony, Brandenburg, and the Palatinate, as well as most of the old established princely houses, the Ernestine Saxons, all branches of Hessen, the Franconian Hohenzollerns in Ansbach, and what became known as Bayreuth, as well as Württemberg, Holstein, Mecklenburg, Pomerania, Anhalt, and the majority of Westphalian and Lower Saxon counties. Catholicism was reduced in Germany to only 3 large principalities: Lorraine, which was already semi-autonomous, Bavaria, and Austria, which was by far the largest principality in the empire. Elsewhere, Catholicism held out in the small counties of the southwest and in 2/5 of the imperial cities. However, since the numerous, but individually fairly small, church lands were reserved for them, Catholics still ruled around 200 imperial estates, giving them a decisive majority in the empire's common institutions. Lutherans did not establish any national organizations. Instead, each prince or city council assumed the powers formerly exercised by a Catholic bishop in their territory. In practice, these powers were entrusted to church councils, considerably expanding the scope of territorial administration and increasing its presence at parish level. Catholic authorities implemented similar reforms in their own lands, though they still accepted the spiritual jurisdiction of their bishops. Regardless of belief, all secular and ecclesiastical authorities pursued similar policies of confessionalization intended to impose the official faith of their territory through education, improved clerical supervision, and more intensive visitations to probe individual belief and monitor religious practices. Such measures were far from universally effective. Heterodoxy and dissent persisted, while there were often considerable discrepancies between outward conformity and inner belief. Many people simply adopted a pragmatic approach, embracing those beliefs and practices that made most sense to their own circumstances. Nonetheless, confessionalization initially helped preserve the Augsburg settlement by directing official energies inwards and away from activities likely to cause friction with neighboring territories. Ferdinand I and his successor, Maximilian II, worked hard to maintain the peace through good personal relations with influential princes, not least since consensus was in their own interests in the face of the constant Ottoman threat to their own possessions. Moreover, the benefits of peace were soon clear to all, as first France and then the Netherlands descended into violent religious civil war after the 1560s. Most German observers were horrified by such atrocities as the St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre in France in August 1572, and urged a culture of self-restraint. Moreover, unlike France, where the monarchy was a participant in the struggles, the empire remained a neutral, cross-confessional legal framework. Lutherans and Catholics might disagree, but they largely refrained from criticizing the empire, since their own rights and status derived from imperial law. The later 16th century saw a strong irenic current, providing additional arguments to bridge religious divisions in favor of preserving political harmony. Confessional and political tension. Three developments challenged harmony after 1555. One was the emergence of Calvinism during the 1560s. Calvinists distinguished themselves from Lutherans theologically, yet considered they were simply continuing Luther's Reformation of the Word with their own moral Reformation of Life. Calvinism made most of its converts in the empire among the aristocracy, unlike the French Huguenots and English Puritans, who evolved into more genuinely popular movements. Apart from Emden in East Frisia, which adopted a Presbyterian structure, Calvinism spread through its acceptance by Lutheran princes, who then used their right of reformation and the territorial church to impose the new faith on their subjects. The first and most significant conversion was the Elector Palatine, who abandoned Lutheranism in 1559. Calvinism slowly gained ground from the 1580s, including the conversion of the Landgrave of Hessen-Cassel, 1604, and the Elector of Brandenburg, 1613, but had been adopted by only 28 territories, including a single city, Bremen, by 1618. Lutherans increasingly resented these inroads into their own faith, but minimized the differences to preserve the peace of Augsburg. The Elector Palatine, as self-appointed Calvinist leader, promoted his own narrow form of irenicism to remain within the peace by finding common ground with Lutherans. Internally, the Palatine government remained dominated by Calvinists, who bullied the largely Lutheran population, persecuted Jews, and refused dialogue with Catholics. Calvinism threatened the peace by seemingly adding substance to Catholic zealots' arguments that no Protestant could be trusted. More seriously, the Elector Palatine deliberately fanned fears of Catholic plots to persuade Lutherans to accept his leadership and his demands for constitutional change. The Palatinate had lost influence to Bavaria, ruled by a rival branch of the same Wittelsbach family who had conquered much of its territory in 1504 and who had remained Catholic. The Elector Palatine's demand for religious parity in imperial institutions promised not merely to remove the inbuilt Catholic majority, but also to level some of the status distinctions that currently disadvantaged the minor princes and aristocrats who formed the bulk of his political clientele. A hierarchy dominated by the electors and a few senior princes would be replaced by a political structure of two confessional blocks, with that of the Protestants firmly under Palatine leadership. Developments in the imperial church represented a second challenge to peace. Protestant princes and nobles were not prepared to forego the benefits of engagement in the imperial church, which still offered around 1,000 lucrative benefices for cathedral canons, as well as the considerable political influence through the 50 bishoprics and 80-odd abbeys recognized as imperial estates. Although these were reserved for Catholics in 1555, Ferdinand's declaration extended toleration to individual Protestants living in church territories. Under this protection, Protestant nobles gained majorities in several important chapters, enabling them to elect their own candidates on the death of each Catholic bishop. Maximilian II and Rudolf II refused to accept these men as imperial princes, but tolerated them as administrators to preserve peace. 10 sees passed this way into Protestant hands, including the substantial archbishoprics of Magdeburg and Bremen. The Duke of Bavaria, meanwhile, promoted his relations in the church lands as a means of pushing his own family as Catholic champions in the empire. Thanks to Spanish support, Bavaria blocked a Calvinist takeover of Cologne in 1583, establishing a Bavarian monopoly of this important archbishopric, lasting until 1761. To advance these objectives, Bavaria pushed the emperor to deny the Protestant administrators rights of imperial estates. The dispute over the ecclesiastical imperial estates was complicated by problems surrounding mediate church property, such as monasteries under secular jurisdiction. Enforcement of the 1552 normative year was hindered by the often confused legal arrangements, involving rights and assets which had been pawned or were shared by several lords. The Peace of Augsburg charged the Reichskammergericht with resolving any disputes by entrusting cases to bipartisan panels composed equally of Lutheran and Catholic judges. The court made sincere efforts to judge according to law, encountering few complaints until cases became increasingly politicized through Palatine and Bavarian propaganda during the later 16th century. It is likely that the peace would have survived the challenge of both Calvinism and disputes over the imperial church had the Habsburg monarchy not encountered serious difficulties of its own around 1600. Charles's partition of his inheritance left Austria with the imperial title, but cut off from Spain's vast resources. Problems were compounded by a further internal partition, creating three separate Austrian lines in 1564. The Tyrolean branch, based in Innsbruck, that of Inner Austria or Styria in Graz, and the main line, based in Vienna. Each branch traded limited toleration for cash grants from the largely Lutheran nobility who dominated their provincial assemblies. Lutheran nobles, in turn, used their powers over parish churches to install Protestant pastors and encourage their tenants to adopt their faith. Around three-quarters of Habsburg subjects followed some kind of Protestantism by the time the dynasty began to reverse this by restricting court and military appointments to loyal Catholics during the 1590s. Coordination of this rollback broke down amidst bankruptcy following the protracted and unsuccessful Long Turkish War, 1593-1606, and subsequent quarreling amongst Rudolf II's relations over his succession, leading to renewed concessions to Protestant nobles in Bohemia and parts of Austria. The distraction created a political vacuum in Germany, adding to anxiety fanned by extremists. The Palatinate was finally able to rally sufficient support to form the Protestant Union in 1608, answered the following year by the Bavarian-led Catholic League. Despite these ominous developments, support for the Augsburg settlement remained strong among moderate Catholics and most Lutherans, and there was no inevitable slide towards war.